from PRX.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and friends beyond the binary. You know, this is a podcast you could listen to in the library because as long as you have headphones on and take a nap, just don't snore because you're listening to Sleep With Me, a podcast to put you to sleep. Hey, everybody, this is Scoots, and I actually need you to listen to this message. If you're a regular listener to Sleep With Me, if you're new, don't worry about it. But we've got some big decisions with the show on the horizon, so I really, really need your help. If you are a regular listener to Sleep With Me, and it has changed how you sleep, you rely on the show, you like the show, it does something for you, or you feel good about the podcast, you like it, or you count on it, I really got to ask you to take action. So if Sleep With Me means something to you or you like it, if you can afford to support the show directly or you're willing to consider giving up one takeout lunch a month to support Sleep With Me, try out a trial of Sleep With Me Plus and test out Sleep With Me Plus over the 7-day trial and just see what you think. But I think you'll find you'll be blown away because there's so many different ways to listen to Sleep With Me and stuff like that. So if you think you can afford to support the show, please do that at Sleep With Me Plus, sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. And if it doesn't make a difference to you, like I can move on to something else if you stop making the show or you decide to put out way, way less episodes or you change what you're doing, I totally am fine with that. That's fine. But if Sleep With Me really does make a difference for you, I mean, I love making the show. I don't like being direct because I usually get way more not nice emails when I'm direct about stuff. But I don't want to put out a message like 3 months from now and be like, you know what, we're changing things up and we've made some hard decisions. I want you to be a part of this decision-making process because it's really like the other time Sleep With Me's been in this place. It's just taking being direct and saying, hey, if you care about the show, I need you to think about doing something about it. So think about it. It'll be cool. Like I trust that there's enough of you out there that get so much out of the show because I've heard from you before. So yeah, check out sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus or take one of those other actions. And what do you say we get on with the show?
And I also want to thank Jonathan Mann, who's Honorable Lullabies, Chris Posterson from Sounds Like an Earful Studios, who edited this episode, did the theme music, Scotty and Jennifer Honor artwork. You know, what else I enjoy is seeing the listeners engaging one another in community over at sleepwithmepodcast.com/nods, N-O-D-S. And I want to thank the moderators over there, Stacey, Lauren, Keith, Summer and Sarah, and Julie and Jennifer. And that's it. Let's get on with the show.
Hey, you up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble staying asleep? Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep or is here while to keep you company while you fall asleep. We do it a bedtime story. Yeah, we throw in a bonus meandering intro. I guess I'm in a little bit of a silly mood. We do it as a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights and press play. I'm going to do the rest. What I'm going to attempt to do... I just buffered. I don't know if anybody heard that, but that was live buffering. Maybe we could talk about buffering, in the intro, but what I'm going to attempt to do is create a safe place where you could set aside whatever's keeping you awake. If you're new, I'll explain all that to you. But what I'm gonna buff. You know what? I'm gonna buff the heck out of this safe place like it was a freaking shiny car, and I was a 16-year-old with a shiny. I guess if I was a 16, maybe let's just pretend though. If I was a 16-year-old with a shiny car. Probably you should buy a lottery ticket because that's not going to, the odds of that happening, of me having anything that, unless they've invented permanent shine. Here, that's another thing we could talk about and maybe market, permanent shine. But I got to talk to the new listeners. Now I have both my hands, I have fingers crossed, and I don't even remember what the first thing was. Permanent shine and something else. Oh, buffering. Oh, I guess there's a difference between buffing and buffering, but I'm going to buff this safe place up. I'm going to pre-buffer. You know, I'm going to have the biggest buffer. I'm going to cash the heck out of this safe place while I'm buffing it, so there will be no buffering. Super cash.
Sleep With Me, the podcast that has a safe place that's been buffed and supercached and, like, which puts the podcast, it puts a buff in buffering. I'll say that in another intro, probably. Okay, so if you're new, I'm going to send my voice across the deep, dark night. I'm going to use lulling, soothing, creaky, dulcet tones, pointless meanders, goofing around, friendly, warm banter, ideally. You know, some people, you may not be able to receive it that way, and that's okay, too. But I'm really here to be your boyfriend, your friend in the deep, dark night, to keep you company while you fall asleep. And you may say, if you're new, what's that you say? I thought this was a podcast to put me to sleep. And I'd say, well, it's a turn in phrase. Really what I do is take your mind off of stuff and sit here as your companion. Stay at your bedside, walk at your side, whatever you're comfortable with, while you drift off into dreamland. I'm kind of like the caretaker. Really, you could take whatever's bugging you and just, like, that's what, not only does the super cache handle the caching stuff, it can handle all that crapola that's been keeping you awake. So go ahead, put it in the super cache. Plenty of room. Did you notice our super cache comes padded? And we found out here at the Buffering Institute. What was the first thing I said that I said I should come back to? That would be, I thought it would be a good book title. That the Permanent Shine Institute. We discovered that increases the ability to buffer the debuffer at 87 tetrahertz, as we say here. That's a joke. That's an inside joke at the Institute, but I got to get back to the. Let me put some permanent shine over on you new listeners. So if you're new, it's a podcast you don't need to listen to, believe it or not. you may have figured that out already on your own because you're a bright person. You don't even need my permanent shine, but, if you want some, here you go. I don't know why. Permanent shine should probably come with a more brighter voice than here you go. But that's a chill voice. Permanent chill, permanent shine. They come together as I buff away. Also, I get distracted. But so, like, you don't have to listen. You can just kind of listen. You can lower the volume. You can listen. You can fully listen or you can barely listen. There's no wrong way to use this podcast. And so you don't really need to listen to it. And as I said, I'll be here while you fall asleep. It only puts you to sleep I'm going to be here about an hour. So you have plenty of time to fall asleep. So there's no pressure. Pressure-free, listening-free. Structurally, you've been here this long, but the show starts with about 6 minutes of business. We have the intro, which we're in, I don't know, usually they're around 12 minutes. I haven't looked at how long this intro is yet. I'm peaking now. Oh, wait, I have a different battery today. So to save battery, my display is off. But yeah, we're about halfway through the intro. Usually around 12 minutes. Then we'll do a story, it's an episodic series, bedtime story after that. And then we close out the show with some thank yous and some good nights. So you have plenty of time to relax here in this well-buffered space. But how about that? Buttered, buffed, and buttered. There's another how come tongue twisters... I don't know. Am I the only one that's thought about this? That tongue twisters and comforting words are very close. Like you say, well, those are the relaxing words. But once you get them too close together, they become tongue twisters. Like buff, that's relaxing. Buffered. If it's not, yeah, I guess buffered is, that's the most relaxing word. Buffering, oh boy. You want to talk about teeth grinding. But if you say, well, if your TV said, yo, it's buffered, I got it covered, you don't worry, there won't be any buffering. That is buffered. Buffed, buffered, and buttered. I mean, what couldn't... You know, that's so buff, buttered, and buffered. There you go. Buff, buttered, and buffered. I guess if I was like on a, like a weightlifting team or something, that's what it would say. But, you know, because then I'd cover myself in cocoa butter or whatever the heck it's shea butter, whatever shines you up. Buff, buttered, and buttered. Team Scoots. What does Team Scoots do? Oh, we buff things. Yeah, we're pro buffers. That's why we now live in a buffered world. You know, once Team Scoots got on it, 2019, world was buffered. We dropped that super cash globally. And that was it. That was the day the buffering entered, you know, whatever you call it when you add an ED. It went from present tense to past tense because it was done. Oh, like at the, those were the days. Well, how'd you do it? Oh, permanent. What do we call it? Permanent shine. Yeah, we invented this thing called permanent shine, and it turns out if you buff things with permanent, if you don't need to buff it, you don't got to buffer it either. And it's complicated. It involves electronics and solid state things, so probably. Also, like, we repurposed some particle colliders, and that's how we did it. Permanent shine. That's what we call it. It was Project Permanent Shine when it was top secret. And if you don't mind me saying, it was pretty revolutionary. Okay, so you're saying that you used a bunch of nonsense to buffer things permanently. Okay, well, you know, if they, like, I mean, some of us believe the part of the sums is all whole. And some of us believe the sum of the parts is bigger than the whole, and some people believe the whole is bigger than the sum of the parts. And I just say that when things are permanent, why ask why when it's buffered? Well, we do have a question here. Okay, go ahead. One more question from my internal press. Why did you feel the need to have every device everywhere declare things were already buffered? Oh, well, that's an easy question. Thanks. And it's a legitimate question. And I acknowledge that. And you might say, hey, why say it's buffered? And someday in the future, there'll be people that never heard of a buffer. And then we won't need to tell them it's buffered. But this puts people at ease, just like the sleep podcast I used to do before, you know, I became, you know, before Muskie took me under his wing. And he said permanent sunshine, sign me up. And I said, you know what, maybe we could bore some permanent sunshine. I said, well, actually, it's a permanent shine, Elon. But anyway, I got to get back to the podcast intro. I got to cut this press conference short. Thanks for the great questions. And yes, the world will be buffered one day. Buff, buttered, and buttered. Buffed, you know, whatever I like to say. Thanks, everybody. All right, hey, I'm back. So it's a podcast that puts you to sleep. You don't really need to listen to it. Don't have to take it seriously. I want to make bedtime something you can breathe in, you can relax. Maybe you could barely laugh, or in the perfect world, you know, things would be buffered, including all the stuff around sleep. You could just, like I said, drop all your sleep stuff in my super cache and let me worry about it. While you drift off into dreamland. And until that day, I hope this podcast, you know, can, in its stead, before, once I get the rest of that sorted out, with the permanent shine and the buffering and the caching, for now, let me just keep you company and distract you. Now, this podcast doesn't work for everybody, so give it a few tries. That's what most listeners say. If you're skeptical, why wouldn't you be? I mean, I don't even know what to, you might say, what the heck did he just talk about? Because it does sound pretty good. And I say, well, yeah, we're getting close. I don't know. I hope I can help you fall asleep. That's all I can say. I appreciate you checking this podcast out. Thank you for coming by. And I really hope, I work very hard and I yearn not only to help you fall asleep, but to make you look forward to bedtime. Thanks. Hey, everybody.
Sleep With Me is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, everybody. It's Scoots. It's like a Tuesday. I guess it's a trending Tuesday, but I was thinking of snow as the holiday season settles in. And it talked about leaves, and I think I've talked about snow in a couple different ways on the podcast, so maybe we'll talk more about it. There's nothing I want to get off my chest about snow, but I was like, okay, if I'm going to do some meandering rambles, we could talk about snow, we can talk about sledding, like a little bit of a memory trip. It'll be all probably real. Of like some snow memories as a child, but also some snow specifics. And maybe if you're like a deep, deep listener, you'll get some new perspectives and some things I've talked about before. So let me take you all the way to Central New York to the 315 area code where I grew up in Syracuse, New York. 13215 was my zip code. Or they could be my current. No, it's not my current zip code. In Syracuse, I think, I never know, like, it has a notoriety for being snowy and wet and cold. And maybe notoriety is a little strong, but that's like one of the things, especially in New York State, they say, well, where are you from? Oh, Syracuse. And they say, this gets a lot of snow there. I mean, maybe someone from Buffalo or Rochester, they might say, because that's the snow belt. And I think I maybe talked about the science, and it leaked, you know, as soon as my brain is like a sieve-like, or I have sieve brain. So I'm pretty sure that the moisture in Syracuse is due to the Great Lakes and the water temperature and the warm and some sort of jet stream action. And Syracuse always seemed to have like the most precipitation or the most snow. And I don't know if any of that's true. That's just what people always said when we were growing up. And I did have, especially as a kid, as most people do, like a sense of hometown pride. And anytime Syracuse was mentioned in major media, you know, my heart beat a little bit faster. So anytime, you know, they were taught, I said, that's right. I'm so proud of that. My city just happens to be in a place where it gets, the most precipitation, but really, I mean, I guess it, like the downside is, and this is probably why I moved away, is it's really nice to visit. It's probably a lot tougher to live there. And I do find myself a person that needs access to sunlight and the outdoors as part of my like self-care process, I guess. Here's a little unrelated tip. Those of you that, I mean, even if you live in Syracuse, so you can use this tip. And it is a sleep tip. Now, it's a little bit tougher in the east, but actually you have windows. So it would be the same thing. It's like as soon as you wake up, and this is something I do on and off. As soon as you wake up, ideally you get out of bed right away. Like as soon as your alarm goes off, that's one of the sleep. I didn't know how this became a sleep tip episode, but like you get out of bed right away. And I haven't mastered that part yet, but usually like, cause also, I don't know, I guess I'm split on that. But if I'm giving tips, like I guess I don't want to give the reality. Cause usually I like to, if I had a dream, I like to lie there and think about my dream. Or lie there and say, well, I don't really want to get out of bed. But ideally, I get out of bed pretty quick nowadays. I don't use my phone. That's one of my new rules is don't touch that phone unless you're putting it in your pocket. And it also depends on, like, you know, my bladder situation, how quick I get out of there. But then I like to make my bed. And now I don't do, like, I do more of, like, a basic bed making where I try to put my pillowcases back on, you know, from whatever was going on in my dreams, you know, great pillow makeout or whatever I was doing, or pillow wrestling or pillow hugging. And then I like will rearrange my blankets so that it's nice when I go to bed. So look, like, I never was like this until I started making this podcast. I realized it's kind of an important thing. Like they say, it's one of these keystone habits, and I actually believe it. I'm not a big believer in all that stuff, but so I don't really make. I mean, I do make my bed. Like, I don't tuck any sheets in. I just I'll pull my comforter off. Then I have a blanket, and then I have a sheet, and usually my sheet and my blanket are pretty well aligned, so I'll just have to flick them and then flick out my comforter. So it kind of like is a basic make, and that takes no time at all. And then the next thing you might do after you visit the facilities, and if you have a pet, a dog especially, it makes it a lot easier, is to go, and I'm lucky enough to live in the Bay Area, so I immediately open my back door. Sometimes Koa lately, she says, you know, it's too early for me, is to go outside, open the door. And I don't know if you're into heavy breathing. I don't know where that came from, but, if you're into any breathing or meditation or sitting or journaling, or if you're like a Julia Cameron, like a person, or some, you know, AM writing or morning pages, or just sitting and listening, is to get outside. And I know, sometimes I'm up before the sun just because of the, you know, time change hasn't happened. When you hear this, it should have happened. And I'm not a morning person. That's the other thing. But I don't really have a choice because I have too much, you know, I got stuff to get done. But to get access as the sun rises, I hear that's good for, like, you setting your clock. As soon as you get outside, I spend a few minutes, and I just try to listen to the sounds, or if there's birds or something to look at, or trees, listen to the freeway, listen to the Port of Oakland, maybe listen to whatever other sounds I'm hearing. But I get a little sun, even if it's below the horizon, it's coming. And I think that's a really good way to start your day, and also to end your night. I just do the same thing because my dog's got to go to the bathroom anyway. And I found, like, if I have, like, which I suffer from meditation avoidance, if I do that, I say, well, this is kind of like meditating. I'm sitting, listening to the noises quietly and trying to not be distracted by my thoughts. So it's like, I guess it's like meditation adjacent. I don't know. Have we reached peak meditation? Probably not. I was waiting to see if Buddha was going to call, ring up my brain or anything. So if you live in the East, it might be tougher, but maybe you could stand by a window. Or if you have to let your pet out anyway, then you're going to have to open the door. I don't know. I can't speak to that. But that's one of the things, is like getting access to light, sunlight, or at least filtered sunlight if you're back east when it's cloudy a lot of the times. So that's, I guess that's just a little sleep tip folded in there somehow. Okay, so back to the subject at hand. Snow, let it snow. You know what I'm saying? Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow, John. So snow, here's the things I think about when I think about snow. A lot of it is related to my bus stop as a kid that I would have to walk to, or trudge in this situation, or going sledding. So let's talk about the bus stop situation. And here's the interesting thing. Well, I don't know why I can't picture Carl and Sheila, my brother and sister, the closest in age to me. We would walk to the bus. We'd take the bus to grammar school. This was for grammar school. We did the same for middle school and high school. These are grammar school memories. So we would walk to the bus stop. Usually we would be, you know, trying to get to the bus on time. And it was downhill. So we lived on a hill. And it was very steep hill, which actually goes into a whole nother set of snow memories, which would be good to talk about. But so we live on this steep hill, and so we would go down it usually to get to school. Snow, you know, I don't know what we'd do in the rain. I guess we had raincoats. I'll have to ask Carl and Sheila about that. Hey, by the way, Sheila, I called you last night. Oh, but I couldn't figure out the freaking Bluetooth on my phone. It kept saying it was dialing your number. So I did try to call you just so you know. Not that you're listening, because I don't know if you, but you might be asleep or I know some of your friends listen to the podcast. What's up, Vanessa? So anyway, okay. Where was I? So Carl, Sheila, and I would go to the bus stop, and we would go there, get the bus, go to school. And usually the only things that were hard in the morning was going downhill. You'd have to worry about slipping if it was really snowy. But Syracuse uses a ton of road salt. And so there's usually a preponderance of this stuff called slush. And this is much different than slushies. Here's the thing, kids, don't, like I always say, don't listen to Scoots. And probably humans, don't listen to Scoots. But so slushies, and there's ice, there's Italian ice, there's Hawaiian ice, there's shaved ice, there's Slurpees, there's Icies. Slush is much different. And I have tasted slush on many occasions, both intentionally, unintentionally, and at the hands of older kids. And I know I have the exact taste of slush in my mouth, so I'll describe it to you. It's really not that bad. Now, the idea, it just tastes like salty snow with like a gritty, almost near metallic, like it's mostly salty snow, overpowering the road salt, but with a kind of, it's not, it actually doesn't taste dirty. It tastes gritty and a little bit metallic-y. And you could get, like, you can even get slush splashed in your face by cars. And, like, this might be the slush cast, because slush is really amazing. Maybe this winter I'm going to have to, get somebody to shoot some slush for me. And ideally, if you're listening, one, its budget's probably 0.0, but, like an hour segments of just slush views. But so slush is when snow combines with like warmer air and road salt. That's how I define slush. And it can be slow. It can be sudden. It can be like a slushy. Like you could get a puddle of slush, which is not a liquid and not a solid. It's like a near plasma. It's in the middle, it's a matter change. I don't know if Bill Nye thinks that, but it's matter in the middle of a change. And I think David Bowie sang about it even. But it'd be gray. It's always gray. And I never knew if that was because of the road or the salt. I'm not kidding. Like, I think when you see a pile of salt, it's kind of, it does seem like it has a little bit of grit in it anyway. But like probably the road picks it up, but it's always like a stark gray color, and it can be beautiful if you're a fan of gray, like I am, especially if a person that like tends to view the world through all or nothing lens and say, man, one day I'll see the world as all gray. And it kind of Syracuse, I used to call it the gray planet when I was, in my angsty phase from like, puberty hit till not too long ago. But so the slush, my relationships with my primary interactions with slush would be, I mean, there could be, I have a lot of them, but my love of slush probably came from after school, walking home from the bus, because we could walk at our own pace. So Carl, Sheila, and I, we would, I don't even know what we'd do. I think we'd just split up, and maybe I don't know who walked the fastest. Probably me. Yeah, but when it was slushy, I would like to dilly-dally. I mean, depending on the slush level and how cold it was. because you could really get some unbelievably high snowbanks, and we'd walk up this hill and you'd see like your neighbor's snowbanks. And I mean, obviously from this podcast, I'd start imagining, you know, I could imagine I was giant. I could imagine I was a mountain climber. You know, there could be other kids around, so we might be doing some snow play, you know, snowball play or whatever. You could do some like light sledding, like slide down a snowbank. If the snow looked fresh, you know, you could do like some snow diving, some snowbank jumping, like just measuring it, you know, say, wow, this snowbank's taller than I am. Because what would happen is the roads would get plowed and then people would have their driveways plowed. So the corner of driveways was always the best place for the, like, the highest snowbanks. I'm trying to think other, like, so that would be one thing that would distract me. I was like, see, I was already distractible on my way home. But then, now, snowbanks are primarily made up of, correct, snow. But as you get lower on the snowbank, closer to the road, that's where the, like, the slush appears, well, in a couple places, like the primary slush occurs with the general interaction between the road salt and the snow in the ice on the road. And I would presume, and again, Bill Nye, you know, I'd love to hear from you. No, I'm not kidding. Like this, like you probably already covered all this. But like, so as the salt would heat, I think, I don't know how, again, a little embarrassing, but I think the salt would generate heat from just getting wet somehow by some chemical reaction, and that would melt the snow. But I guess because the roads were dirty or the salt was dirty, we don't have an answer for that, even in my brain. I guess we could presume both. You know, that would be responsible for the gray color, but I guess it would give some body to the melted snow. Now, sometimes the ice and the temperature in the air and the temperature of the ground would be aligned that it would just turn to water. And in that case, the roads would be black because we had asphalt roads in Syracuse, and there would be salt on the road and maybe water, depending. But if it was a particularly snowy day the night before, or is still snow, well, if it's still snowing, that's a whole different territory. I don't know if it would go there, but you would have slush, which would be gray, and it could be like packed gray snow. I guess that would be if it was snowing or if it just snowed. But most of the time, I guess it would be like a slush, just like a slushy, but gray and gross, but not super gross, as I said, because I've tasted it. Yeah, but another better slush zone was where the sides and the edges of the road met the snowbanks, and also the spray from the cars, because the wheels of the car would spray slush and jettison it into the sides of the snowbanks, and that would form some pretty cool looking stuff. I don't even know how to describe it, but like slush getting sprayed into the snow. I guess that's how you describe it. But so the slush zone, depending on, again, the temperature and the situation, was good for a couple things. I mean, as I said, pretending to be a giant. I think I did a lot of giant role play as a kid. I don't need to as an adult, believe me. But you could be stomping slush because there'd be like great slushbergs, and also cars could accumulate slush on the undersides of the car, and those would be really good slushbergs. If they broke off, they would look like a gray iceberg. And depending on how, if they were pure, like if you found yourself a pure slushberg, they're great for smashing with your feet. And sometimes they'd be hard, and sometimes they'd just be like almost like they were sculpted, and you couldn't believe, like when you put your foot on it, that it was holding together. Like almost like it was a liquid that had somehow, that was somehow holding its shape, like almost like it had a like invisible wax coating. And as soon as you touch it, it like it lost its form. You'd be like, holy cow, that is cool. And it's just like a really, not a consistency. I mean, no offense to slush and Slurpee makers and stuff, but that stuff, like slush is better. I mean, maybe because of the salt, like slush really was not a solid and not a liquid, like where a Slurpee or something like that, I feel like is like just really small ice crystals, where slush was nearly a plasma gel like thing, or just so like so small. I don't know. I guess like, what am I doing? Like, here I am. I'm a spokesperson for slush. Excuse me. And then another great thing that I know I covered before that I love to do with slush was like make dams, because we lived on a hill and then the slush would start melting. And I don't know if they like, you know, the like there'd be rivers of water on the sides of the road from melting snow, even, you know, if it got warm enough, you know, broke the freezing barrier or whatever. Yeah, that the edge of the snowbank was just a great spot to make dams for the water trickling down the hill and make, you know, make channels, and then you could make dams. And then, I mean, the cool thing about making dams, is the futility of it in some sense, at least for a kid, because it has action. Like, I guess like, I never looked at it from a storytelling perspective, but it really is like, a great story, I guess, if you're role-playing as a kid, because you really, if you're building a dam made out of snow against water and the temperature's not freezing, you constantly have to work. There's going to be constant conflict, which makes it fun, and there's always the stakes, because the stakes are whatever you're imagining happens when the water breaks through. So you really are that you can cast yourself as a hero, which would be an engineer or like some sort of benevolent giant. Or another fun reversal, role reversal, is to build really good dams and then have the stakes, like where the dams seem impenetrable, and then be the destroyer of the dams. Either by, you know, throwing snowballs, rocks, or being a giant again. And really nothing at risk, because it's just water going back down the hill. Because, I mean, usually, well, my backpack would be at risk, because who knows what I would have done with that. So that's probably, you know, like, why is your homework? Well, it was in a snowbank. The dam broke, and it washed my homework away. So that was really a good interaction with both. That was like slush and snow. And then as we went up the hill from my bus stop, we could talk about a great figure in my childhood, Billy, who was a young man, and he, as an adult, he moved to the big farm, but, he lived next door to me. He was probably, when I was in grammar school, he was in high school. When I was in late grammar school, so when I was in sixth grade, he was probably a freshman or sophomore. So maybe 4 to 6 years older than me. And he was a redhead, and he was cool. I mean, he was like, he was like the good kind of bad boy. Like, I never saw him as a bad boy, because he didn't even need that. Like, he rode motorcycles, built motorcycles, rebuilt motorcycles, had rusty motorcycles in his parents' backyard all the time, and in the winter, rode snowmobiles. And my parents were not a big Billy fan, and he also was a redhead, and he had this snowmobile suit that we, as kids, he was just a legendary figure of my childhood, because, as I talked about, there was also the BB Kids, which Billy was friends with, and he was more of a neutral figure, where the BB Kids were more of a myth. They lived up the street with Billy. They were actually bad, bad boys, even though they were friends with Billy. I don't know what they actually were. Like, I spent so much of my time creating myths and wanting my life to be like a TV show, that I think I cast them, but though we did have interactions with them as kids, which, so Billy was like, he was more like whatever, Who was that dude? You know, one of those, he was like, cool. He was cool. I guess that's as simple as it can be. And so his house was the green, like right before my got to my house would be his house. And usually he was, I guess he was in school. I don't even know, I don't even know where he went to high school or what his situation was. I mean, I can imagine that he at some point was like, I know, you know, I don't need any high school anymore. I've grown out of it. Yeah, but so, like, if you passed his house and he was home, it was always a fantasy of ours to be able to ride on his snowmobile, which my, you know, my mom would not allow us to do. And I think I talked about it in the podcast, there was one all, like, real, like, I don't know where my parents were, and I know it was nighttime, that he let me ride his snowmobile. Now, usually, because he was a redhead and my brother Carl was a redhead, so they were a little bit closer. And I think Carl's just a nicer person than me. And so I think Carl probably got a ride on the snowmobile before I did. Plus, Carl like was a little bit more courageous than me. But at some point, I remember Billy was like, let's go. And it was like a really, it was the snow was really intense because I remember like we could even go in the road and we were jumping, like he was jumping over snowbanks into the road. Nothing too extreme. Like mostly if you went up a snowbank and went down for a kid, that was amazing. And then there was like some sort of island and he went between two trees, like a traffic island or something. And I don't know where else we went. I mean, I remember that maybe I had like slipped off the back of it or something. And then my mom found out and she was like, I can remember that was my only ride on the snowmobile. Though we sat on the snowmobile all the time because he always, like, just like his motorcycles, he had a backyard full of like old snowmobiles that he was working on. So we would sit on him a lot and pretend we were racing, you know, like Carl and I, or maybe Bill, my imaginary friend, and I. But so that was another cool thing and the cool thing was we happened to live down our street was a big golf course, and my parents don't golf, so we weren't members of this golf course. And this was before, like, golf course developments. So I guess at some point there was probably houses on this golf course, but it was mostly like you went in down this court or whatever, and it ended at the golf course. And we happened to live, where this street ended was the 18th hole. And it was very hilly, like you hit off a tee and then there was a huge drop hill. And then, you know, long fairways or something. I don't know. I don't golf. Like, it was par five or something. And, like, this was the most amazing place to go sledding. Like, one of the luckiest things as a child was that we lived this close to someplace that had high-quality sledding. Like, almost too high-quality. Like, and so anytime, like, I don't remember... I think you only go sledding like twice a year because then you get so cold, you're like, okay. Or, you know, especially with me and Carl, you push the envelope too much and then you say, okay, well, now we can't sled anymore because we pushed the envelope. Yeah, but, you know, especially in Syracuse, it was always freezing cold. Like anytime it was good to sled. And I remember we did have like snow clothes. So we'd have snow pants, probably boots and socks. So you're fit, you know, and then gloves and a jacket and a hat, and probably a scarf was pretty essential, but usually you'd be sweating pretty good. And so trying to think, like, I lived in the era of plastic sleds. I think there, like, we did have, a metal sled at our house, but one, it was wicked metal and wood. It was wicked heavy. And I also think incorrectly, oh, those are called toboggans. Oh, that's probably why. Like, I think that was, like, actually a good invention was these plastic sleds because those toboggans, like, they go really fast. And they weren't as flexible. And if you, like, so So, yeah, I think it was best. And I think, like, the sleds I spent the most time with were orange plastic sleds from where else but Kmart's. And I think the orange sled either had blue handles or white handles. And I think we had, we had the circular sleds. But I think that was our primary sleds. I think we had two of them. And, well, like, if people were really taking sled, like, if it was a Saturday or Sunday, like, and people were off, like, around the holidays or something, you know, the sled could get pretty busy. But otherwise, it would be usually me and my siblings, and then maybe some of the other kids that lived in the neighborhood, or my cousins or something, if they had come by. But I guess that would be more on the holidays, too. And so, like, I don't know how familiar people are with golf, but it's a sport where you hit this ball. I think, I don't know, I know people love it, but it just seems to me like some sort of, I guess if you're emotionally, but anyway, you like, there's like three different kinds of tees, which I guess, freaking hello, 2016's calling. But at least when I was a kid, there was like a pro, there was an amateur. And then I'm just going to say like a starter tee or a new tee, but they had a more direct, like patriarchal term for it. And I know from my family that my Aunt Helen was the best golfer in our family. Maybe her brother Mike was pretty good too. But Uncle Jerry, he was pretty good. So I think those three, like, but Aunt Helen, she would always win. The golf contest that they played. But so at this particular thing, the pro and the amateur tee were up, on a hill that had like a wall, like a wooden wall where they, I think they would put flowers and stuff when they were golfing. And then there was the last set of tees. I think those were red tees. And then there was the hill. And it was a long hill. Like, not only was it pretty steep, but not too steep where you're it was really good exercise. If you really got some speed going, you could go really far. And so we would go there. And I guess I don't know if like, this is like the lightest version of extreme sports. Or maybe, I don't know if anybody that got into extreme sports through sledding, or I guess they have that, it's a thing like bobsledding that you can do. But so you would go sledding there. Now, the conditions really did dictate how fun it was and how cold it was outside. And I guess how many kids, like if you had too many kids or too many ages of kids, it might be less fun because, ideally, like one of my sister's friends would be there so she could hang out with them. Or if it was just me, Carl, and Sheila, if we were allowed to go sledding by ourselves, I think we'd probably get bored pretty fast because you go up and down and walking up the hill, you'd start to sweat and. So you'd need a nice air temperature where you wouldn't get cold if you were sweating and you just get worn out. And then you'd even back then you could put a rope at the front of even a cheap plastic sled like we had, which would help when you're carrying up the hill. But if you didn't have that, you'd have to carry the sled under your arms. And it was a really light, basic plastic. And I don't know, let's talk about the kinds of sleds. So you had a two-person plastic sled that you could probably fit three kids in. And it was just like a one piece of plastic, that the same kind of plastic they make kids' swimming pools in that aren't inflatable. So some sort of plastic that I don't think is around too much anymore, but very durable. But not a shiny plastic and more of a matte plastic. And then it had handles that you would hold on to when you were in the sled that were the hard, shiny plastic. And you would need to hold on to those on this hill. And especially if you made a jump, which is where that's where things would start to go off the. And this was like another childhood myth, like the older kids would get there. and they were the ones that built the jump. And I think at some point we became the ones that would build a jump. And I was never like much of an engineer. You know, I was better at role playing that I was a giant engineer with the water and the slush. Yeah, but let's talk sleds before we talk jumps. So that was the one kind of sled, the 2 to 3 person. And I think 2 people is usually best, because I don't know how fun it would be for the third person in the back. And if 3 people, like 2 people, you could get enough momentum going, but the weight wouldn't slow you down. And you would really need packed snow or like wet snow, but not too wet. If the snow was either too wet or too new, it would slow you down. But so ideally it'd be cold. So it'd be like near icy conditions. But then if it was cold and near icy conditions, going uphill stunk and it was easier, you know, to sustain an owie, and it would be freezing. So you'd wear, you know, you'd get worn out. But so that was one kind of sled. Now, another popular type of sled is the circle sled, which is like a dish, popularized. I think at some point they made them of metal, because I think in National Lampoon's, Chevy Chase uses like an aluminum one. But by the time I was a kid, those were plastic. I don't think I had any aluminum sleds, so they'd be pretty cool. I just wonder what the cold transfer would be and which would go faster, plastic or aluminum. And I don't remember, like, I think the downsides of the cool thing about the plastics, like, 2-person sled is that it's going to go straight almost no matter what. It almost had 2 runners on the underneath of it, like fins, so it would stay going straight. And you could try to turn it, and, like, you could accidentally turn it, or, like, you could lean, and it would do a slow turn. But otherwise, it went straight. The problem with the circular dish sleds is it would just seem like you had very little control. And especially if you're jumping, you want to be going straight at the jump, because you don't want to go off the side, because you could ruin the jump. But also, like, it wasn't a good idea to go on it. Like, you had to see where you were going so you could prepare for it, and then continue your momentum straight ahead. And I think just the spinning around, I guess maybe, I don't know if it was a personal choice. I just didn't like those circles, those dish sleds. And we'll just get to final toboggan. Like, so there was like the small toboggan, the Fearless Flyer, right? Was that what they were called? Or like the RC Flyer or whatever, Radio Flyer. I think those were what they were called, which Rosebud, I think, is the most famous of those. The Rosebud was like an early edition. And those were sleds, and they were made of metal. And I maybe we had one, because I remember seeing pictures of my dad pretending to pull us in that, or one or two of us. And that was a very picturesque Saturday Evening Post Norman Rockwell type sled. I think, I don't know if, if they have like a fourth, like the Pledge of Allegiance, like winter edition. You'd have a sled, the Radio Flyer would be in there probably. Or maybe the Radio Flyer was the wagon. Maybe they made a sled in a wagon. I mean, that would make sense, right? Because they're working with like whatever that was, steel or metal or aluminum. Yeah, so that was one kind of sled. And that was like usually a 1 or 2 person sled. And it seemed like it had controls. And you would sit up, and then it would have rails, just like a sleigh, like Santa's sleigh or a sleigh ride sleigh. And conceptually, I think as a kid, like especially with the hill we were at, one, it was too heavy because it was made from like some sort of iron. Maybe not, yeah. And also the conditions had to be spectacular for that thing to move. And so we did not, I don't really remember using that. But then there's like something called a toboggan. Oh yeah, there's 2 kinds of toboggans too. There's the rail edition toboggan. But this is the kind of toboggan that I'm thinking of. I was mixing up my Rosebud with the toboggan. And I don't even know if that's the right thing. But a toboggan is like, I'm trying to think if you've never pictured this before. But it has like a curly Q at the front, and it's like, usually it's wood, like some sort of like, this would usually like only like an adult would show up with one of these things. Cause there's no way a kid, you'd need two adults to carry it. But it was this long, sled, and with a curly, it was made of wood, like some sort of wood that you could bend, and, let's see, like probably waxed and stuff like that. I don't know. And it was just this long piece of wood with a curl at the front. And it usually even had the one I'm imagining, I think was my Uncle Eddie's. It even had like padded seats. And you could, usually these were like a 4, 6, 8 person toboggan. I don't know if that's the right word, but that's what I'm calling it. And you would get in it and you have no control. And the joy of it was like being in it with this collective experience with all these people. And again, I think the conditions had to be perfect. No one could get in the way because this was a piece of wood with like the weight of 4 to 8 people. And it kind of had this plow on the front. So you need everybody to be coordinated to get in it, or like an adult or a teen at the front to like launch the thing. But it would be fun, and usually, like, you'd be holding people, so it'd be fun. Like, you'd have some closeness, like, with your siblings, and maybe, like, I can imagine for very rare times feeling, like, a protective aspect of my siblings and my cousins or whatever. And, but that thing, then someone would have to pull it up the hill again, so that was a lot of work, and it just felt like conceptually, I don't know, like, and then there's inner tubes. I don't think there was a lot of inner tube sledding when I was a kid that I remember. But then, so then there was jumps, and this orange sled was made to jump. These orange or basic plastic two-person sleds. So usually you'd build a jump. Ideally, you know, kids had all these theories, and I used to fantasize that I could make a good jump. But the best jumps were like even seasoned, like they'd be made and then the weather would hold. So the jump would be out there and it'd be able to freeze, and then you'd be able to put more snow and ice on it. So you'd have to really pack the snow, and you'd really need a good lead in so that you just didn't crash right through the jump and like ruin it. So whoever was making these jumps really, I mean, we would try. And I think maybe, like, as we got older, maybe we made one or two. But there was a couple times, yeah, that whatever these jumps were made, like on this hill, you'd fly. And then sometimes you had to hold on to the sled and you had to sit upright. And, of course, people like my brother Carl would, like, jump out of the sled in midair. And it wasn't like you got so high. I think it was the first chance as kids to get high. I mean, and I'm not kidding, like, with adrenaline and thrills, and like sometimes someone would like get a scrape or get a little sad. But it was always also like braggadocio, like, oh, just see what I did, or oh, I dare you to go backwards, or close your eyes, or don't hold on, or kids trying to go over in their saucers. So that was always nice. And there was something like very mechanically soothing, I guess, about sledding and then going over the jumps and then having to walk all the way back up the hill. And you'd be hearing the other kids going down and the noises of laughter and yelling. They kind of seemed very nice and soothing and comforting. And then the sweating was good because you'd be warm. And then at some point your extremities would get cold and then you'd go inside, or you'd just be tired. But I think usually boredom or like someone crying would be the two signs it was time to go home. Though, I don't know, if you're like, sometimes your fingers, your toes get cold to be like, okay, I just like, I'm done. I want to go home now. Yeah, but another really enjoyable thing about the snow is like being able to lie there, like in a fresh pile of snow. And some people would make snow angels, and that was always a fun thing to do. But I don't know, I found it especially when you were really warm because you had a lot of winter clothes on, lying in deep powder and being immersed so that you almost lose sight of the horizon, but you still have sight of the sky. and the snow's deep enough that you can't quite feel the earth beneath you. You can only feel the snow. And even like because you're below the horizon, your hearing is different and you can hear different snow sounds like crackling, and the regular sounds change. And there's something very visceral about the cold, being so close to something cold, that it really is a perfect place to lay and to think about, like, how warm you feel, like, with warmth all around you, and that you're cradled in something so safe and warm and nice, and you're looking off in the sky. The stage happens to be the perfect blue. It's just some wispy clouds in the sky. And it's like you're warm, you're super warm, you know, with whatever that wool or is, but you're not hot. And you see, man, this feels good. It feels like I'm like, I don't know, man. I just feel so good right now. So warm, so secure, so nice. Good night. I want to thank everybody that reviewed the show over on Apple Podcast from Australia, Prawn Frog, who said, does a hi-ya like our friend Miss Piggy does, Kermit, and says, seriously induced sleep, hi-ya. But podcast actually sends me sleep with enthralling stories I can't get enough of, funny, lighthearted, banterful podcast. Never fails to do the trick. Scooter seems pretty decent. Working my way through the old episodes, so my only issue is dealing with the app. Menjem 1, no clue what this is about, 5 stars. Fall asleep within a minute or two. Dealing with some stuff that's making sleep tough, and I tried this out, totally hooked. Thank you. Good. This is from 735. The podcast is good. Thank you. Number one TT, speaks too fast. That's not relaxing. That might just be the beginning of the show with the ads, or the podcast might have got bumped to like 1.5 speed. Maybe I am speaking too fast. I don't know. I'll try to slow down. It works for me. 4 stars. This is from Akari. So solved my mind spinning insomnia. I thought to myself, huh, this isn't what I expected the first time I listened. I wonder if I'll be able to fall asleep. Then I fell asleep. Thank you. I listened to Star Trek episodes. Loxana. I find myself correcting when he says Risa or Lox. I'm not doing a bit either. I find myself correcting him, but generally meandering recaps knock me right out. As soon as I have some flexible income, I'll become a patron. Thanks. But it doesn't work for everybody, which is correct. Nuanced rambling from Uncle Scoots, from Faye from UK, which rhymes. Just discovered a podcast a few days ago. Enjoy the wordplay and languid rambles. Don't last beyond 20 minutes. A strangely potent sleep aid. True believer. This is from Ann R. Heard about it on BuzzFeed. Highly praised and figured why not. Nothing else has been working. Nothing to lose. Best decision I made. I don't think I've ever made it to a story. I barely make it through the intro before I'm out like a light. It helps me sleep through the most of the night. Occasionally, sorry, distracted by the next. Thank you, Anner. This one, is this man drunk or high as a kite? No, unfortunately, this is my natural state. And 1 star. Please ignore the 5-star reviews, cause this COS, this app is dreadful. It's a podcast, by the way. But do not download. Don't waste your time. Counting sheet is far more effective than this irritating nonsense. That's from Sunshine. Little Ray Sunshine. Thank you. ANG says, great podcast. Usually fall asleep. Occasionally I don't. Scoots keeps me company either way. DB340 from Australia. Thanks. I appreciate the time and effort of making this podcast. quite unorthodox. At first, I found it strange to listen to, but after a few episodes, I was hooked. Many thanks. Yeah, many thanks to you. And PJ finally says, works every time. Literally can't tell you what gets talked about. Never make it that far. I just remember the phrases, deep, dark night, and creaky, dulcet tones. And I appreciate the help Scooter provides. I'm a Patreon subscriber. Since starting to listen to 3 months ago, I've only used medication when I was sick and needing NyQuil. Worth a try. Thanks, everybody, PJ and everybody else, reviewing it on Apple Podcasts. Thanks and good night. All right, everybody, this is Scoots. I'm talking about tonight's sponsor, Helix Sleep. You could take that Helix Sleep quiz at helixsleep.com/sleep. I'm just about to hit my 4-year anniversary sleeping in my Helix Dusk Lux. And I took that Helix quiz. You know, I sleep on my side. I sleep on my stomach. I toss. I turn. I don't want to overheat at night. And when I took the quiz, that was the mattress it matched me with. The Helix Dusk, I chose the Helix Dusk Lux. Because Helix has like 20 unique mattresses. They've got an award-winning Lux collection, the Helix Elite collection, which is new, a mattress designed for big and tall sleepers, even a mattress made just for kids. And the way you'll know the Helix mattress works best for you and your body is to take that Helix sleep quiz at helixsleep.com/sleep. You'll find your perfect mattress in under 2 minutes. That personalized mattress will be shipped straight to your door free of charge. And Helix knows there's no better way to test out a new mattress than by sleeping it in your own home. That's why they offer a 100-night trial and a 10 to 15-year warranty to try out your new Helix mattress. Everybody's unique. Everybody sleeps differently. That's why Helix has several different mattress models to choose from, each designed for specific sleep positions and feel preferences. There's models with memory foam layers to provide optimal pressure relief if you sleep on your side. Models with a more responsive foam to cradle your body for essential support in stomach and back sleeping positions. Plus, there's enhanced cooling features for people like me, keep us from overheating at night. If your spine needs that extra TLC, they got you. Every Helix mattress has a hybrid design combining comfort and support. I took the Helix sleep quiz. Like I said, I got matched with the Helix Dusk. I wanted something with the right firmness that I could sleep on my stomach, my side, even my back. And they kept me from overheating. And it fits the bill. And not only is it the best mattress I've slept on, the setup was fast and easy. Helix mattresses are delivered in a box straight to your door for free. Plus, all Helix mattresses come with a 10 to 15-year warranty, depending on the model. And if you don't want to take my word for it, Helix has been awarded the number one mattress pick by GQ and Wired magazine. It's even recommended by multiple leading chiropractors and doctors. The sleep medicine is a go-to solution for improving your sleep. And Helix is offering 20% off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/sleep and use the code HELIXPARTNER20. That's HELIXPARTNER20, one word. This is the best offer yet, and it won't last long. With Helix, better sleep starts now.